Hello and welcome to episode 706 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I'm one of the co-founders here at ETR, as always joined by fellow co-founder Evan Silva. And the best players left in free agency are now dust balls. We're talking about Ryan Tannehill, Tyler Boyd, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Logan Thomas. So I think it's finally, Evan, I think it's finally safe to say that we can wrap up free agency, put a bow on it once and for all. How's it going today?
It's going great. And that means we're going to move full head on steam into the draft very, very soon. We got a bunch of great shows coming up, but we got a bunch of stuff to cover, from this last wave of free agency. I'd say we're about 80 to 90% done with free agency. There were a ton of signings this year. Obviously, we got that salary cap bump by $30 million up to $260 million. Teams were very aggressive. What's left of the free agency class is crumbs.
On today's show, as Evan mentioned, we're going to discuss the fallout of the moves that were made since we last recorded. So since we last recorded, that was March 14th. So there's been a bunch of really important moves that have happened since March 14th. We're going to break all those down. At the end of this show, we will also highlight our 10 biggest fantasy winners of the free agency period. Before we get into it today, two quick reminders. First, it is with great joy, unbridled enthusiasm, I can let you know spring football is back. This spring, there is just one league. It's called the United Football League, as the XFL and the USFL have merged. UFL, the United Football League, 8 teams, 10-week regular season. As the sick puppies that we are, we are, of course, covering the UFL with projections, ownership, top plays, depth chart, lots more. These minor leagues for all sports, but these minor leagues for football and preseason NFL, to me, you can create the biggest edges there. They're just the best because we are digesting and getting information on injuries and usage that is just not publicly available. It's just really hard to compile all that. We do all that work for you. So if you're interested in the UFL, head to establishrun.com now. You'll see the UFL tab there with more info. Team previews are already up for free. Depth charts are up for subscribers as well. First round of projections for week one will be up Thursday. Second, still ton of action on Underdog right now. Our rankings for 2024 best ball are continuously updating and they are live right now. If you head to the NFL tab, all of our best ball rankings are up. You can upload those directly to Underdog if you so choose. Also, majors only PGA drafts. We have rankings for that. If you're a golf subscriber, daily NBA snake drafts. If you've never tried Underdog, promo code ETR for a matching deposit bonus up to $100. That's promo code ETR at underdogfantasy.com. All right, Evan, let's get into it here. Here are the 12 most important things you need to know from the final 10 days of free agency. Again, these are moves that were made after on March 14th or later. First biggest move was one I actually tweeted about before it happened, and Jets Twitter picked it up. And they went nuts and it was positive. And so Jets Twitter loves me now. Shout out to you guys. Of course, they hated me when I was saying bad things about the Jets last year. But anyways, Mike Williams, who was, of course, cut by the Chargers, does a 1-year up to $15 million deal with the Jets. Now, Mike Williams has had his fair share of injuries. He's coming off of an ACL tear. But they desperately, in my opinion, needed help opposite Garrett Wilson. Alan Lazard was a mess last year. So now you give Aaron Rodgers 3 new offensive linemen. You give him Garrett Wilson, you give him Breece Hall, you give him Big Mike Williams, you give him arguably the NFL's best defense, and they have the 10th overall pick. On paper, Evan, and I want to get into the details of the Mike Williams move, but just on paper, this roster, I think it's really good, man. I took some long shot futures on them I can talk about in a second here this past week, but what do you think of Mike Williams signing with the Jets?
Well, first of all, the roster does look good on paper. It's like the biggest boom bust roster in the NFL because it's a bunch of dudes who have had, you know, quality NFL careers, but are on the downside of their career or coming off of significant injury. I thought the Mike Williams deal was worth every penny though. And it was initially announced as up to $15 million. You look deeper, it's $8.3 million. 1 year's $8.3 million. I think that's entirely worth it for a player that was playing at a really high level this past season. Look, it was only 3 games, but he was averaging almost 90 yards per game, 10 yards per target. The year before, he averaged almost 10 yards per target. You know, when we saw him as a featured part of the offense, with the Chargers. He flashed the ability to be a 1A receiver. So, but it will come down to health. He's not necessarily going to have that on his plate with Garrett Wilson and the Jets. I think right now, if the Jets three, if the season were to start today, the Jets three receiver set would be Mike Williams and Garrett Wilson on the outside, some combination of Allen Lazard and Xavier Gibson on the inside.
I mean, I do not think that Mike Williams' fantasy outlook is as strong as this is a real life move. We have a huge gap between Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams. We have Garrett Wilson 11th overall in our underdog rankings right now, Mike Williams 93rd overall. So that is a big, big gap. Mike Williams has been a big touchdown guy. I think that Aaron Rodgers highlighting running backs and the reason we have Breece Hall up there as a very nice first round pick as well. He's going to get a lot of touches too. So it's not like I'm excited or overly excited about Mike Williams from fantasy. From real life, though, I did take Jets 30-1 Super Bowl, Jets plus 300 to win the AFC East, and Robert Saleh, which I don't even love because, God, I feel like coaches could hold this team back. But Robert Saleh 25-1 to be the coach of the year, a little sprinkle there, as well as we start to build the futures portfolio for 2024.
Yeah, Nathaniel Hackett back safely as the Jets offensive coordinator.
All those, as I was putting those bets in, I was like, I can't believe I'm betting on this dolt Nathaniel Hackett again. I can't believe I'm putting more money on this guy. But yeah, I do like the roster a lot. Speaking of the Chargers, so once Mike Williams went, it was kind of assumed, or thought at least, that Keenan Allen would be staying. Turns out, Chargers went to Keenan Allen, asked him to take a pay cut. He said, nah, man, I'm coming off my best year. I'm not taking a pay cut. Chargers say, fine. We trade you to the Bears for a round four pick. So this one I thought was a little surprising to me. I mean, they left themselves, the Chargers did, with absolutely nothing. Josh Palmer and Quentin Johnston are their wide receivers. Their tight ends are Hayden Hurst, Will Dustley, and Donald Parham. Their running backs are Gus Edwards and Isaiah Spiller. They have they've come in here, this new regime, and given them no weaponry, given Justin Herbert no weaponry, and it scares me. So first, Evan, what do you think about Keenan Allen going to the Bears for a round four pick?
Well, I was extremely critical of the Bears offseason in the last show that we did. I thought, and then I think it was the same night that we sent that out, that they made the trade for Keenan Allen. I was like, this is one of the better moves of the offseason, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, giving an incoming rookie quarterback a steady, sure-handed, great route running possession receiver to complement DJ Moore. Keenan Allen knows how to get open. You know, that's something that I think, I mean, look, he's what, 33 years old now, and this is not necessarily a move made for the long term, but this is a guy that I think that into his mid 30s will still have the capability to get open. He's always, you remember him coming out of college, he ran like 4.7, but he's had like a borderline Hall of Fame career because he just knows how to get open, period. And, you know, especially on, cause Caleb Williams is so good as like a second reaction, improvisational quarterback. Like, this guy is someone that he can rely on to get open in those scenarios, and even when he's playing within structure. I thought it was a really smart move by Ryan Poles. I thought that the price was great for what they got him for. So big clap for the Bears on this one.
Okay, our first run of ranks here, we have DJ Moore 28th overall, Keenan Allen 55th overall. Market has it a little bit tighter there, but I think that's fair given how well DJ Moore performed and where Keenan Allen is at in his career. The question I have for you, Evan, is what are the Chargers doing? Because I am concerned. I am very concerned that they are going to try to turn Justin Herbert, who I think is a very good young quarterback. I know people disagree. I think Justin Herbert is a very good young quarterback and who can play aggressively. They're going to try to turn him into like Trent Dilfer on those Ravens teams. The problem is he's not going to be that efficient, I don't think, given the weaponry around him. The run game led by Gus Edwards and Isaiah Spiller. And I understand they have the draft coming up and they have a high pick. I believe they have the 5th overall pick. But still, man, what are the Chargers doing? They have nothing at the skill positions right now.
Well, Jim Harbaugh at Stanford used Andrew Luck as a low-volume passing quarterback. Then he had Alex Smith in San Francisco. Greg Roman, when he was in Baltimore, Lamar Jackson, very low volume quarterback. That's what I would expect. At number 5 overall, it seems like it's going to be wide receiver or Joe Alt out of Notre Dame. And it wouldn't surprise me if they went with Joe Alt because of the philosophy that they seem to be pursuing right now. I mean, but you're right. I mean, it's almost like they're punting at wide receiver. As you mentioned, Josh Palmer. Again, I don't think you can rely on anything coming from Quentin Johnson after what he put on tape as a rookie. The good news is that the wide receiver class is really, really deep. So in later rounds, they'll be able to take some shots. But it wouldn't surprise me if they went with the tackle at number five.
Okay, you want to be a really good running team. Your running backs are Gus Edwards and Isaiah Spiller, you know? So I'm not even that excited about that. Now, I understand that they can get running backs in the draft also. Just worried about what they're doing. And we do have Justin Herbert very low in the rankings. We have him as our QB 16 right now in fantasy. And I believe last year we were up way higher on Justin Herbert. Market is around QB 12 on Justin Herbert right now. Again, we're at QB 16 on him.
A very telling decision that they made. And I mean, I'm not saying that it's a poor decision or anything like that, was that they elected to keep those two pass rushers. You remember they were in a position where they could move on with Mike Williams or Keenan Allen or Joey Bosa or Khalil Mack. They wound up keeping Mack and Bosa and letting go of both of the wide receivers.
Yep. Yeah, clearly. Focus on defense right now. And maybe, you know, if they're focusing on both lines, maybe it'll be all, or maybe they'll trade back and try to get multiple picks. But we're going to have a lot more draft speculation coming up soon on future shows. All right. This one is exciting for fantasy, I think. Marquise Brown, Hollywood, fake Hollywood from Hollywood, Florida, not California. Marquise Brown, 1 year deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. Just makes a lot of sense for me from both sides. From Marquise Brown's side, if he can stay healthy and not drop the football like other Chiefs wide receivers did all last year, Marquise Brown's going to hit free agency again in 12 months at a very young age. And he just saw Calvin Ridley get $50 million guaranteed. I mean, assuming Marquise Brown plays well with Patrick Mahomes this year, he could really break the bank. I like that from their perspective, from Marquise Brown's perspective. From the Chiefs' perspective, Marquise Brown is the best wide receiver talent Mahomes will have had since Tyreek Hill left, I think, pretty clearly. I think it's a win-win on both. Evan, what do you think of Marquise going to the Chiefs?
Yeah, Rashee Rice is pretty good, but they play different roles, you know. This is what they need on the perimeter, as you mentioned. You know, he's not a consistent catcher of the football, and he's battled injuries. But his skill set, when he's healthy, I mean, I think that, this is a guy that can absolutely separate, get behind the defense, take advantage of what Patrick Mahomes brings to the table. I really like this signing. You know, it's not like a long-term investment by any means. Marquise Brown is 26 going on 27 years old. I still think they need another dude opposite him. You know, it like enough with the playing Justin Watson, 60% of the snaps. You know, you can't rely on Kadarius Moore. Sky Moore, I think, is pretty much a dust ball at this point. I still think that they should look long and hard at a wide receiver with the 32nd overall pick. They should not be done here.
Well, especially since Marquise Brown's only on a 1 year deal. And right. And if he has a good year, he's going to be very expensive and the Chiefs might not be able to bring him back. We do have Rashee Rice 21st overall, Marquise Brown 62nd overall in our rankings right now. One thing on philosophy, we were just talking about this, where we've been working on the Travis Kelce ranking, which is a very difficult ranking. Chiefs philosophically, though, like what they did last year, rely on the defense, run the ball more, run the ball in the red zone more. I think that could still kind of be sticky. You know, people are like, oh, that's going to regress. They're going to go back to being super pass happy. I don't know. They give a lot of money to Chris Jones, obviously. They lost Snead, which we'll get to in a second here, but they still have McDuffie. So I don't know. I kind of think that the way they played last year might be the best way for them to win right now. But yeah, that's definitely an interesting philosophical question on how the Chiefs are going to play.
Well, one of the things about the Chiefs defense last year is it was really, really young. I mean, Brett Veach has been on fire hitting on draft picks on the front end and on the back end on defense. And they're bringing like the vast majority of those dudes back, and they re-signed Chris Jones.
Yeah.
So no question. Steve Spagnuolo back as well. You know, the Chiefs, like, they're going to be really good on defense. Can be unsticky from year to year, okay? But on paper, they look like they're going to be one of the best defense in the league again.
Yep. Okay. Speaking of wide receivers signing with AFC contenders, I like this deal. And, you know, I did some, you know, kind of harmless tweet where I was ranking the remaining free agent wide receivers left. And I had Curtis Samuel up there pretty high, and people were getting all over me. People do not like Curtis Samuel. I'm not I have not given up on Curtis Samuel. Out of all those guys that were left, he was clearly the youngest. He's super versatile. He can play all over the field, play in different positions for the wide receiver. Bills get him for a three-year deal worth up to $30 million. I'm sure the real money is nowhere near that. I think it's a good move for the Bills, who desperately, desperately need weapons, especially after losing Gabe Davis. Evan, what do you think of the Curtis Samuel deal?
I liked it, you know, and the Bills have had players like this before, and they've had levels of success with them. Isaiah McKenzie, Deonte Hardy, Khalil Shakir a little bit. But I think Curtis Samuel is better than all those guys. If I were to do rankings, and I like what Khalil Shakir did, I would have Curtis Samuel above Khalil Shakir right now. Curtis Samuel can be a high percentage. He's, first of all, a player that you can hand the ball off to at the backfield. He can make plays that way. But he can also be a high percentage receiver, might make life a little bit easier on Josh Allen, bring that, you know, make sure that completion rate stays high. I liked it a lot. And I think that the actual numbers, the base value, 3 years, $24 million, very, very palatable.
Yeah, and the way that the Bills played down the stretch last year was not the way that they've played for most of the Josh Allen era. They went to a far more run-heavy scheme and fewer 3 and 4 wide receiver sets. We have that reflected in the rankings a little bit here. Curtis Samuel, we have 130 overall. Khalil Shakir, 132 overall. Kincaid up at 77. James Cook up at 59. But yeah, super interesting offense, and excited to see Curtis Samuel with Josh Allen in more of a featured role than what he's had.
I'm interested to see if anything might happen between now and the draft regarding Stephon Diggs, because I'm just not 100% sold that he's going to be back with the team. I don't know anything, but I don't know. I'll be waiting to see on if anything happens there with Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, really tough ranking on Stephon Diggs too. He's been going in like the end of the second round, early third round in drafts, and it's hard to pass on him there. But there's definitely a lot of smoke down the stretch each of the last 2 years. A trade, a rare NFL trade of skill players. The Falcons gave up Desmond Ridder to get Rondale Moore from the Cardinals. Obviously, Ridder will be there to back up Kyler Murray. More interesting for us is how Rondale Moore fits in this new Falcons offense. Obviously, we're expecting them to run a ton of 3 wide receiver sets this year. That will be, it looks like, will be Drake London, Darnell Mooney, and Rondale Moore. Now, I'm a Rondale Moore guy. I like Rondale Moore. I was scared at his inability to earn targets last year, especially because Greg Dortch was out there earning targets at a way higher rate than him, often in the same role. So I don't know. Maybe Rondale Moore is better in my head than he is in real life. What do you think of the Falcons trading for Rondale Moore?
Well, you know, I've kind of made my thoughts clear on Rondale Moore for the last couple of years, that I think that he should be, you know, not a wide receiver and more of like a slot back, or even like a change of pace back who you give the ball to on the ground 5 to 9 times per game. And in the NFL, he is averaging 5 yards per carry. This past year, he averaged over 6 yards per carry. In college, he was at like 8 yards per carry. He's not big enough to even do, you know, what Austin Eckler did. But, you know, that type of player, Austin Eckler, earlier in his career. But I think it with the Falcons, right now on paper, they are Drake London as their number one. On the outside, Darnell Mooney is that field stretching role player on the other side, and then Rondale Moore probably in the slot and maybe used a little bit in the backfield, although they are bringing back Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier, so they may not find any room for him in that capacity. I think that he projects right now as their starting slot receiver.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much of an appetite for Rondale Moore right now. We have him ranked 204th overall. His ADP is like 212. Right now is Rondale. Darnell Mooney is going much higher, up in the 150s range. And of course, Drake London, I mean, we'll get to him here in a second at the end of the show. But yeah, very excited about him.
One thing I think that is somewhat important to note as we start to talk more about fantasy football is the impact from like the Falcons. Their defense right now needs a ton of work. Mm-hmm. I mean, their good players are on defense are starting to get old. They've got 2 defensive backs that are good, and then almost nothing else. Grady Jarrett is getting old. They have no edge pass rushers. I mean, this projects as a shootout team as they move on to Zach Robinson as their OC.
I mean, classic Kirk Cousins team, right? How many Kirk Cousins teams have been throw for 400 yards, give up 400 yards? You know, it's like, yeah, it's shaping up really well for Falcons in fantasy. More on that at the end of the show. Justin Fields, we've been talking about this, I feel like, for 2 months. Finally, we have a resolution to the Justin Fields saga. Goes to the Steelers for a conditional 2025 round 6 pick. Mike Tomlin says that Russell Wilson is still in pole position to start, and I believe him. I think Russell Wilson will start week 1. I guess the question, Evan, is do you think Justin Fields makes starts for the Steelers this year, and what do you think about the Bears' move to finally get rid of him for effectively pennies, I mean fractions of pennies on the dollar?
Well, it was just snowballing in the wrong direction. You know, there was a time like entering the combine, I thought that the Bears might be able to get like a second and a 5. I went to the combine, didn't think they were going to get that. And then I was like, are they even going to get a 5? And they wound up getting what, a conditional 5 that in 2025. So essentially a 6th, because you're supposed to adjust down around. I mean, they had to give him up for nothing. At the same time, I don't understand why there would be any pressure to start Russell Wilson under Justin Fields. Justin Fields, first of all, they're going to be one of the most run-heavy teams in the NFL. Justin Fields brings so much more in the running game than does Russell Wilson. And Justin Fields has a chance, albeit perhaps slight, to be the Steelers quarterback of the future. Russell Wilson does not have that. So I don't know. Can you make the case for me why Russell Wilson should be favored? I understand that he's had more success from a one-loss standpoint over the course of his career, but so is Joe Montana, and he's retired.
Exactly what Mike Tomlin said. He said body of work, right? Body of work. And I think in NFL circles, Justin Fields is not highly regarded, and maybe Russell Wilson still is at some level, at least his body of work is. So I know you've talked about Justin Fields being unable to process when he drops back, unable to process fast enough at the NFL level. That can send coaches to the moon. I agree with you, though. If they want to win the most games this year, to me, it would be just start Justin Fields and run the ball 30 times a game, you know, and try to win that way.
This is an off-topic tangent, but I thought, and they the owners' meetings are going on right now, and there's like a coaches' breakfast where the reporters go all go around and talk to the coaches. And Shane Steichen, I thought the Colts head coach, had one of the most interesting interviews, talking about like their specific roster and what they want to do, and talking about Anthony Richardson. Justin Fields, we talk about how he's a slow processor. Shane Steichen, who has had an incredible amount of success with various quarterbacks throughout his time as an offensive coordinator head coach, was like ebullient about Anthony Richardson's ability to process quickly. We didn't get to see a lot of Anthony Richardson as a rookie, but Shane Steichen admitted that he was blown away with how quickly Anthony Richardson process information. I know that you love Anthony Richardson. He should be such a fun player if he can stay healthy this year.
He's going to absolutely smash. We have him up as our QB5 right now. So, I mean, we're not sneaking him past anyone. His ADP is QB5 also, but yeah, Anthony Richardson is going to smash. Okay. Speaking of quarterbacks, a small one here, Sam Howell to the Seahawks for some pick swaps. The only reason that I wanted to bring this one up is it's obvious now that the Commanders are taking a quarterback with their first pick, but B, some people think Geno Smith is on thin ice. Geno Smith isn't good enough. He's not an NFL starter. He's a sub-average NFL starter. And they bring in Sam Howell, who took so many sacks last year, but had some decent moments as well. Do you think there's a real competition here, Evan, now between Geno Smith and Sam Howell? And how do you think that plays out?
I do not, but at the same time, it's an entirely new coaching staff. So, you know, if for some reason the new coaching staff gets frustrated with Geno Smith, maybe they could look into Sam Howell. There were moments early in the season last year and even around midseason where Sam Howell, like, I thought, all right, he looks like he has a starting skill set. But I think that kind of ran its course. And he reminds me of like Ryan Fitzpatrick. He could have a Ryan Fitzpatrick year where he hangs around like 10 years. Mm-hmm. He gets in there. He's a high variance backup. I kind of like the idea of having a high variance backup instead of a quarterback who's just going to run the offense and, you know, you got to run the ball to move the ball and you end up punting a lot. Like, you have a high variance quarterback who gives you a chance to like actually win games and score points. And I think that Sam Howell gives you that because he's willing to be aggressive. He's also probably going to take too many sacks, and he's going to make some mistakes just like Ryan Fitzpatrick. But, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick had runs where, I mean, shoot, you won like 10 games in a 16-game season with the Jets 1 year. And they had weapons so that if Sam Howell – if let's say Geno Smith got hurt, Sam Howell would, like, become an interesting fantasy quarterback. Like, last year, Sam Howell, I think he finished as a top 15 fantasy quarterback, and for a lot of the year, he was a top 12.
Yep, for sure. And he gave you a little bit with his legs. Also, yeah, it's an interesting point because, like, the Browns went to Joe Flacco last year, and he's – you know, his lows are really low. He throws a ton of pick sixes, but his highs are really high too. And you saw that with the Browns. He won comeback player of the year, going nuts. So yeah, it's an interesting thought on backup quarterback strategy. A couple of defensive moves I wanted to touch on here. I know we don't normally do too much on defensive moves, but this one I thought was interesting. Legarius Sneed, the Chiefs trade Legarius Sneed to the Tennessee Titans for a 2025 round 3 pick. Titans then turn around and give Legarius Sneed a $76 million deal with $55 million guaranteed. Now, the Titans are blasting. I mean, Sneed, $55 million guaranteed. Ridley, $50 million. Lloyd Cushenberry, the center, $26 million. Chidobe Awuzie, the cornerback who play opposite Sneed, $19 million. Tony Pollard, $10 million guaranteed. Kenneth Murray, $7 million. I mean, they're going to put a lot of talent, I guess, around Will Levis, but I still don't have a great feeling about them actually being good. I'd probably feel better about it if they had Vrabel, to be honest, but of course they let Vrabel go. What do you think about the Sneed move and then also the Titans just absolutely blasting in free agency?
Yeah. Well, they had a lot of money and they spent it, you know. So, you know, their new head coach is Brian Callahan. He brought his dad, Bill Callahan, one of the best offensive line coaches, along. And I guess they're going to mostly bank on that. I think that they'll probably draft another offensive lineman. They actually probably should draft like freaking three of them. But their offensive line looks really bad right now, even after they signed Lloyd Cushenberry. Like, glaring holes at multiple positions. That would be the biggest weakness that I would see. And that's a very big one because it doesn't mesh well with Will Levis, whose sack rate last year was way, 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 way too high. So that would be the biggest concern. But, yeah, I mean, I guess the feeling right now is that they're going to keep DeAndre Hopkins, even though they could create a lot of salary cap room by letting him go. They don't necessarily need that salary cap room. So, I don't know. The wideout core has a lot of potential on paper. Treylon Burks, Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins. We like the talent of Chig Okonkwo. You know, can't say the Titans don't have weapons.
What do you think about Levis? Just generally, like, Levis is going to be an interesting fantasy player, I think, as like in 2QB leagues and in these super deep best ball leagues. He certainly has some weaponry around him now. And given their running back room, like, they don't have a thumper, right? They have Pollard and they have Spears. Mm-hmm. They could be really throw heavy if they can get this offensive line thing squared away. Any thoughts on Levis?
I mean, shoot, Brian Callahan comes from the Bengals, who have been very, very throw heavy. A lot of shotgun, a lot of passing.
Yeah,
high pass rate. So, yeah, that's definitely a possibility. With the state of the offensive line, I think you're going to want to get Will Levis getting the ball out of his hands as quickly as humanly possible, because he ran into those sack problems and their offensive line is such an issue. I don't know. I think that the jury is out. Obviously, Will Levis came out and he looked great initially, and the more he played, the worst that he got. And there were some really bad games there down the stretch. And the history of second round quarterbacks is not very good. So I definitely have a level of skepticism, but I mean, I'm trying to stay open-minded on him. And again, the weapons, like, he's got the weapons.
Yeah. I mean, a quarterback who can move a little bit with Hopkins, Pollard, Ridley, Spears, Chig, Burks. I mean, his ADP is 230th overall right now in one QB. All right. Another move, I just want to give a tip of the hat to Aaron Donald. Did make a decision to retire, even though he's still playing at a dominant level. So shout out to Aaron Donald, certainly one of the best players of our generation. And then just what the Rams are going to look like this year. I was kind of thinking they have spent a ton on their interior offensive line. Something crazy, like $100 million or something they spent this offseason on the interior of their offensive line. Defense, though, without Donald could be bad. Again, leading to a bunch of shootouts. Puka is going to be a top 10 pick, Kyren Williams is going to be a top 12 pick as well. But yeah, Evan, any thoughts on the Aaron Donald retirement and what the Rams defense is going to look like this year?
They did steal Kobe Turner in the third round of the 2023 draft, which takes a little bit off that. But I mean, don't you think that Kobe Turner benefited from playing next to Aaron Donald? Of course he did. So I don't, it's almost like losing two players, maybe even two and a half. That's how high impact of a presence Aaron Donald was. I mean, I think that this is going to be a shootout team. It looks like a shootout team on paper. They also lost their defensive coordinator, who did such a great job. Raheem Morris replaced him with Chris Shula. But yeah, I mean, their offensive line all of a sudden looks really good, especially that interior. Stafford showed that he can really still play last season. Cooper Kupp, you know, showed that he's, he's probably on the downside, but not totally finished. Yeah. Once he finally got healthy last year, and obviously Puka, a baller. And Kyren, obviously a baller. So I think they're going to score a lot of points again.
Yeah, I mean, we're above ADP on Puka. We have him 7th overall. We're above ADP on Cooper Kupp. We have him 34th overall, and we're pretty close on Kyren as well. So three huge fantasy players on the Rams for sure. Let's go to a couple small ones here. Deontay Foreman signed with the Browns. So the Browns running back room now looks like Jerome Ford, I would consider the number one, then Dante Foreman, and then Pierre Strong, and then maybe Nyheim Hines still on the roster too. Of course, I did not mention Nick Chubb, who we do not expect to be ready for week one. We do not expect to be ready for week four. We really don't know exactly when he'll be ready. But man, Nick Chubb's left knee has been through absolute hell going back to the Georgia days. I mean, we're talking about like decade of left knee issues for Nick Chubb and going through a very difficult rehab again. So hard on expectations there. But I did think Dante Foreman for real cheap was a fine signing for the Browns. What do you think about that and their running back room?
Great signing. Have, you know, ever since Deontay Foreman made it back from that Achilles, you know, he's been, and it took him 4 years to come back. I mean, I think he's been really impressive. He was impressive in Carolina. He was impressive with the Bears. Now he goes to a team that has a great running scheme, a bunch of, you know, stud run blockers. I was going to be like really high on Jerome Ford, actually. And this takes a lot of air out of that balloon, I believe, because Deontay Foreman is a guy where you can put it in his belly 15, 16, 20 times in a particular game, and he can be really productive and wear down a defense. I mean, he's like, you know, Derrick Henry minus, you know, 20 pounds. But I mean, he's a big boy. He's a horse. And yeah, this really hurts my outlook for Jerome Ford.
Okay. Also, speaking of the Browns, I just want to tie up the bow on the Jerry Jeudy thing. So last time we talked about Jerry Jeudy getting traded. This time what happened since we last recorded was Jerry Jeudy got an extension. Now, the reported numbers were $41 million guaranteed. That sounds like a lot, but that was baking in the $13 million that he was already going to get this year, no matter what. So it's only $28 million in new guarantees for Jerry Jeudy. Not a ton for a good wideout. The question is he a good wideout? Now, one thing I did think from this extension was we were talking about who's going to be ahead, Jerry Jeudy or Elijah Moore. Given this contract, I kind of think that Jerry Jeudy is going to be ahead of Elijah Moore. I'm curious who you think is better between those two. Evan, any thoughts on the Browns' decision to go ahead and extend Jeudy early here?
It was a little bit surprising. I thought that they were just going to maybe ride it out on that one, the fifth year.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was a large sum of money. They wound up pretty much just guaranteeing that and the next year. It's really a 2 year guaranteed deal. You know, Jerry Jeudy's 24 years old. Let me see when he turns 25 in a month. But I mean, that is really, really young still for a dude who it feels like he's been in the league for like, you know, 6 years. But I mean, I think it's worth a shot. He's had, repeated high ankle sprains, which just torpedo seasons, especially for a wide receiver that works like Jerry Jeudy. I mean, he's, you know, very reliant on agility and footwork. Yeah. So you suffer a high ankle sprain, that can be really tough. So much of the fantasy outlook comes down to, I think, Deshaun Watson. I would agree in two receiver sets, Amari Cooper at X, Jerry Jeudy at Z, Elijah Moore in the slot. That's a three receiver set, and two receiver sets, Amari and Jeudy.
Yeah. I was actually, like, Jerry Jeudy has gotten so much crap from everyone and so publicly from Steve Smith. After the Steve Smith thing, people were like, Steve Smith is going to cost Jerry Jeudy money because now everybody, you know, everybody respects Steve Smith so much. No, he still got his, you know, $28 million extra. So, you know, good for Jerry Jeudy. All right. Last one here before we get to the biggest winners of free agency. Alexander Mattison stays in the league. I thought maybe there was a chance he'd be out of the league, but Alexander Mattison stays in the league, gets a deal with the Raiders. Now, the question is, what will the split be between Zamir White and Alexander Mattison? Or maybe they'll add another person, another back to this room. We have it projected with Zamir White pretty far ahead and a bunch of the Antonio Pierce comments make me feel pretty good about that. But what do you think about Mattison to the Raiders and how that shakes out for Zamir?
Well, Antonio Pierce was asked about Alexander Mattison and Harrison Bryant, specifically Harrison Bryant, who the Raiders signed to, I believe, 1 year deal, only $1.5 million. That might be a little bit more away from the Browns, of course, won a Mackey Award. And the response was a resounding, Harrison Bryant and Alexander Mattison are going to be backups to Michael Mayer and Zamir White. I like Zamir White. I don't know what his ADP is right now, but I will plan on being ahead of him in my rankings.
Zamir White ADP right now is 103rd overall.
You know what? That is nice. That is nice, nice.
I do think it will come up as people start to digest what the Raiders are doing here and how valuable really that role was on the Raiders last year. I mean, running backs, starting running back for the Raiders was heavily involved in the pass game, heavily involved in the goal line and seeing volume of 20 plus touches. So, and that included Zamir, you know, when Jacobs was out.
And that included Jacobs not having a very good year. Yeah. I mean, and especially Antonio Pierce, you know, he would talk about carry numbers in his post-game press conferences. Like, we want to get this dude a certain number of carries. You know, when you can have that kind of a, like, accountability and reliability from your fantasy running back, especially if you're getting him at freaking number 100 overall. I mean, that would be really, really nice. He should definitely be in the top 75 right now.
All right. Now, we are going to do what everyone wants. Everyone's lists, everyone's rankings. We're going to give that to you now. Going to start with number 10 and go to number 1, the biggest fantasy winners of the free agency period. Drum roll, please. Number 10, Josh Palmer. And maybe, if he has any ability at all, Quentin Johnston. Of course, when you lose Keenan Allen and you lose Mike Williams, I do think the Chargers will be very, very run heavy and it will not be pretty. And I think they're going to add someone. But still, when you lose Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, it opens up so many targets. And Gerald Everett opens up so many targets. Josh Palmer and Quentin Johnston, at the very least, are volume beneficiaries right now. Number 9, Curtis Samuel. Talked about this one already at the top. Goes from maybe the third option from a Sam Howell offense to perhaps the 2B behind Dalton Kincaid for Josh Allen. Pretty valuable boost there for Curtis Samuel in projection. Number 8, Zach Moss. Of course, Zach Moss, Bengals made the decision. Hey, we prefer to have Zach Moss over Joe Mixon. You can head back to the episode that we talked about that one on. I believe it was 2 or 3 episodes ago. Can check out more for our thoughts on Zach Moss. Number 7 is the guy we just talked about. Zamir White stepping into some form of the Josh Jacobs role now is Zamir White. By the way, if you go on Twitter and you search Zamir White videos, there's some videos of him lifting weights. I love watching these guys lift weights, man. This guy was putting up some serious, serious stuff. Number 6, Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram. Cal Ridley is now gone. Gabe Davis is in. Clear out the middle of the field for Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram. Number 5, George Pickens. If Russell Wilson is the starter, at least on paper, what George Pickens does well and what Russell Wilson does well really fits. And now Deontay Johnson is gone also. So certainly a big win there for George Pickens. Number 4, the big dog himself, Derrick Henry. I mean, Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry in the same backfield. Talked on a previous episode about how we did not think Derrick Henry really lost a lot or lost a step at all last year. I thought he actually had a pretty good year, did Derrick Henry last year. Number 3, Josh Jacobs goes from Vegas to this ascending Packers offense. Expect him to have a really big role. They did bring back A.J. Dillon, but as you saw last year, it's really hard for anyone to rely on A.J. Dillon. Number 2, Marquise Brown, who we talked about on this episode with Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce. Patrick Mahomes now is Mr. Brown and number one biggest fantasy winner of free agency, Drake London. And maybe Kyle Pitts, if you think Kyle Pitts is good. They will get the NFL's biggest scheme change year over year. Last year, the Falcons were dead last in 11 personnel and three wide receiver personnel under Arthur Smith, just 29% of the time, which is outrageously low. Under Zach Robinson, the Rams last year, massive 89% of the time they were in three wide receiver sets. Current 11 set is going to be Cousins, Bijan, London, Mooney, Rondale Moore, and Kyle Pitts. I like taking shots on all those guys, but Drake London, to me, he's been going like second or third round. I don't think it's crazy to take Drake London end of first round, early second round right now. Super, super exciting. And then the Kyle Pitts stuff, God, Evan, do you want to weigh in on the Kyle Pitts stuff? There's an all-out war going on in Slack right now about where we should have Kyle Pitts ranked.
There's just so much to consider. You know, the MCL, PCL injury. I was listening to a Ross Tucker podcast recently, and he asked Greg Cosell his thoughts on Kyle Pitts, but Ross wound up injured. Ross does a lot of sideline work before and after games, and I mean, he knows all the coaches and a bunch of the front office people, and he was doing a Falcons game, and the clear-cut feeling was that, you know, among Falcons, you know, personnel, was that Kyle Pitts was just not healthy. And so that, but I mean, like, how long is that going to be the excuse, number one? And like, it's not like he had a recent surgery to fix that. And we did have the initial surgery to fix it. Like, it clearly didn't fix it. Yeah. So, I mean, is his knee just shot? You know, there's one scenario that I've thought about is the Falcons trading Kyle Pitts on draft day and drafting Brock Bowers at number eight overall. Brock Bowers, of course, played at Georgia. That's just something that has like crossed my mind. But, you know, he had the 1,000-yard rookie season.
Yeah.
He hasn't been good the last 2 years, but he had to deal with Arthur Smith and,
right,
and poor quarterback play. I mean, there's just so many moving parts here.
So if he's healthy, I think he'll be used in a more conducive way. I mean, his ADOT was so long last year. Meanwhile, guys like Laporta and Kelce are getting these like short layup targets constantly. Let's get him a few of those. And we've talked about this. I'm not sure he can win against defensive backs. In fact, Kyle Pitts probably can't win against cornerbacks. Get him against linebackers. Get him against safeties, not cornerbacks. So I don't know, man. I think a scheme change away from Arthur Smith will do wonders for Kyle Pitts. And I'm excited about him. And he's not as expensive as he was. You know, he's just, I'll check his ADP, but it's just right now, it's just people have kind of had enough.
There was another thing from the Kirk Cousins introductory press conference. He said that he was talking to Kyle Pitts because they wear the same number. And Kirk Cousins is like, yo, I'll cut you a check, whatever. You know, I just need that number eight. And Kyle Pitts was like, no, man, just throw me the ball. Like, that's all I care about. Just throw me the freaking ball.
Yeah, Kyle Pitts going around 70th overall right now. You know, so it's not as opportunity cost is not as high. But yeah, certainly a lot to think about there on all the Falcon stuff, but certainly feel great about Drake London right now. All right. Finally, that is going to do it for our free agency coverage here at Establish the Run. Tons of free agency articles up on the site. You can check those out if you want more detail there. Starting next week, we'll be going full blast on the draft, starting with ranking of prospects. Bring back our old friend, Mike Renner. For Evan, for producer Ryan, for producer Luke, be sure you're subscribed on YouTube or you're a horrible person. I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.